Knight. I'm head of biosciences at the University of Derby.
How did you first become interested in HPV as an issue?
Oh, well, I've been working in HPV now for the last 18 years, and I first started working in it, looking at how the virus itself works, how the virus can infect cells, and how the virus can cause cancer. I've moved over probably the last sort of 4 or 5 years, looking a bit more about actual HPV infection in the mouth and the diseases it can cause, and how that relates a little bit around to how we're vaccinating our girls and our boys in the UK.
Why do you think it's so little known about HPV compared to some other sexually transmitted conditions?
Probably say we know a reasonable amount about HPV in the way that it causes the diseases, perhaps more than other viruses that cause cancer.
Yeah.
I suppose we don't know much about it in regards to it being a sexually transmitted disease is because it doesn't really present to many people in the same way, say if they had a different type of sexually transmitted disease. People don't always know they're infected by HPV, and also it can be quite a transient infection, sort of 18 months after you're infected, generally your immune system starts to work and it clears the infection. So it's not quite so well known as it'd be a long-term issue. And most people, I said, don't know they're infected. So it's not quite as well, I suppose, talked about in society in that way.
How should we think about HPV? Because on one hand, it's a virus that nearly everybody's got. But on the other hand, it's a virus that can cause cancer in a small number of cases. So on one hand, it's kind of quite trivial. On the other hand, it's obviously very serious.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's a really real key thing about HPV. As you said, probably about 80% of the population has been exposed to the genital strains of the virus by the time they reach 25. And that's a really high proportion. But the majority of those then go on to probably spread the infection around a little bit and then just clear the infection, as I said, about 18 months later. So it's not really much of an issue. It's obviously, as you said, it's then that small population then go on, and they're mainly, they don't clear the HPV. They remain infected with the virus for a longer period of time, and the reasons behind the infection, we're not really sure why they can't seem to clear it. But they remain infected for a long period of time, and then we know long-term exposure to this virus then can start to make the infected cells become cancerous. But what we also do know is that that link between HPV and causing cancer is strongest within the cervix. And that's probably more related to the biology of the cervix and how that's perhaps more prone to developing cancer by having a oncogenic virus present like HPV. Because we do also know that the virus infects all parts of the genitals, and it's really only the cervix though that's the main place that we see people presenting with a HPV-related cancer. What we do find more though is that we do know people can obviously get cancers in other regions of the genitals, but it's nowhere near as prevalent.
Right. You say we know nothing about why some people can't fight it off. Do we know anything at all? Is there a genetic component?
Nothing like that. There's no sort of predisposition of a link between if somebody in the family's got it, that you're going to pick it up. There is obviously evidence that if your partner has a HPV infection and you're sexually active, you are going to probably pick that up because of the way it's spread by close contact. But we don't know why certain people don't clear the infection. We know that obviously if they've got maybe background health issues, so if they're immunocompromised, so HIV, people with HIV is a prime example, their immune system doesn't work as well, so they then can't clear the viral HPV infection as well. Or maybe if there's other underlying health issues, maybe people that, again, have got something like cancer and they're being treated with immunotherapy drugs, if you pick up a virus, you're less likely to be able to fight that viral infection because your immune system's not working. There's also some links about potentially whether contraception and that kind of stuff can increase your risk of picking up the virus and smoking. But again, we're not really sure why when somebody's got it, why they can't clear the infection, other people naturally can.
You're saying that some forms of contraception might increase your likelihood of catching it?
There is that discussion out there. I mean, there's two ways of discussing that with the contraception side of it. It's obviously if it's a woman is taking a form of contraception that prevents them getting pregnant, they obviously may not be then using other methods of contraception such as condoms.
Okay. So
and therefore you have that causative link of maybe picking it up that way. It's one of the few viral infections that we know by using a HPV, by using a condom alone, doesn't necessarily prevent the infection.
Right.
Because HPV is spread by touch, if you've touched an infected person prior to that, your fingers may then spread that infection to yourself. But with anything, using a condom, therefore, will also help reduce your likelihood of getting HPV, because what we do know that mainly HPV infection in the genital region comes through probably little micro tears within the genitals, which normally happens when you're having sexual intercourse. So therefore, increase your likelihood of picking up a HPV infection from an infected person if there is no barrier method there. But unlike certain STIs that are spread by bodily fluids, a condom will prevent the bodily fluid from entering the other person, so therefore they won't get infected. HPV, because it lives on the skin, you can pick it up whether you're using a condom or not. And one of the examples I always use for that is it's the same viral strain, same virus, different strain that causes verrucas. And most people don't know how they picked up a verruca.
At the moment, girls are vaccinated, boys aren't. Mm-hmm. How did we kind of get to that? What's the history of the sort of vaccination debate in this country?
Okay, well, obviously, we introduced the HPV vaccination in 2009, and it initially came out as more of a cervical cancer vaccination. So the idea being that if a young girl does not pick up the high-risk strains of the HPV, and they're the strains, the high-risk strains that we know will go on with long-term infected girls to produce and maybe give them a chance of getting cervical cancer from it. So the idea behind that is if you prevent them picking up those high-risk strains of HPV before they become sexually active, then if they haven't got infection with that, then we should then see a reduction in the amount of HPV-related cervical cancer. Mm. So that's obviously what we've moved forward with in this country. Now, the rate, as I said before, of HPV cancers in the genitals is a lot lower in places like the penis and the anus. They just don't seem to come through such high frequency. So obviously, when you've got a vaccination program, you have to think about what you're trying to prevent. And in this case here, we're probably trying to prevent women from developing a cervical cancer from that HPV infection, rather than necessarily trying to prevent other genital cancers, maybe more around the male side, because they're so infrequent. So we're not really at that stage trying to necessarily, when we first started vaccination, trying to prevent the viral infection itself, because it's so prevalent in the community. Most people naturally clear the infection. As you said, it can be seen as quite a trivial viral infection from that point of view. We're not necessarily trying to prevent people from that burden of disease. We're trying to prevent that cancer from forming. However, as the vaccination program itself has improved, and now we have a vaccination program that works against four different strains of HPV, high risk and low risk strains, it has moved more about now trying to prevent the viral infection itself, trying to prevent the genital warts side of it, and then long-term infection potential cancers. However, in the UK, we're still only vaccinating our girls because there's not enough evidence really out there at the moment that says by vaccinating our boys against HPV, though we're able to reduce the amount of virus in society, which is really important and really from a boy's perspective, an important thing to be aware of, there isn't that strong link at the moment with HPV and how it's causing cancer in the genitals, but there's an emerging link and a very strong emerging link that HPV is causing head and neck cancers.
Would you like to see boys vaccinated?
I think long term, I think it's something that we should be considering within the UK. Other countries already do a gender neutral vaccination. So already vaccinating their boys and their girls. Within the UK, we're already exploring particular cohorts. So homosexual men are getting actual trials to see about vaccinating homosexual men to give that particular community protection against the virus. Because at the moment, obviously, the protection against the virus is mainly focused around heterosexual communities. So we are looking to vaccinate homosexual men to help with that side of it. I think that long term we should be looking to consider vaccinating our young boys purely from that disease burden by reducing the amount of virus in society will obviously help with people just presenting at clinic with HPV infections. But also if, as we're seeing, this increasing link between HPV infection and head and neck cancer, that certainly is a very robust argument as more information comes forward that we really should be looking to vaccinate our boys. But at the moment, the research out there is not fully informed enough to make that final decision here within the UK.
Can you tell me a bit more about the head and neck cancers?
What we do know, probably know about the last sort of 15 years now, is that HPV is not just in the genitals, the high-risk strains, we also know it's in the mouth. And the mouth cells are actually quite similar to the cells that cover the genitals, so it's not surprising that perhaps we're seeing the virus infecting there. What we don't know about that at the moment is how many people naturally in society carry an oral HPV infection. That kind of research is not out there, and it's something that I'm personally interested in doing. It's an area of my research, is looking to see how many people in that 18 to 25 year old bracket initially are actually carrying an oral HPV infection. But what we do know is that we're seeing more people presenting, particularly men in the sort of 30 to 50 bracket, are presenting at head and neck clinics with a HPV-related head and neck cancer.
Right.
And so what that obviously shows is that the virus is living in the mouth and is able to start to cause cancer in the mouth, and it's predominantly presenting in the oral pharyngeal region, which is basically the back of the throat, around the tonsils. The tonsils seem particularly prone to picking up or developing a HPV head and neck cancer from the viral infection. And we are seeing now this a very steady increase, particularly, I said, in men going to clinics with HPV head and neck cancers. And some of the latest documentation out there is starting to say, latest research is starting to say that actually head and neck cancers related to HPV are maybe now as common as HPV-related cervical cancers. So it's an area that's going to have a big focus to try and work out, obviously, why the virus is causing the cancer in the mouth, how many people, as I said, naturally carry the viral infection. It starts to talk about how we're spreading the virus, how is the virus getting there in the first place. And it also starts to ask, if the virus is in the mouth, what other parts of the body may the virus also be living in, and also, therefore, what other cancers maybe it could also be associated with.
Can you put any sort of numbers on the head and neck cancers? I mean, you're saying it's comparable with cervical cancer. That's a pretty high number, isn't it?
It certainly is on the increase. One of the reasons why it'd be comparable with cervical cancers is actually those numbers are starting to decrease overall within the world because of good cervical screening techniques. So women may still be presenting at clinic with abnormalities in their cervix, but they're not going through to that late stage of cervical cancer. So obviously we're seeing a resulting drop in cervical cancer because of vaccination, but also because of good cervical screening. So with the mouth, what we're starting to see now, information of talking to people I'm aware of is not something I can give you the stats top of my head straight away. Apologies, I need some of the information in front of me. Is at the moment, I think it's around about a third of head and neck cancers are related to HPV. Cancer Research UK would be a great place to go and look at because it starts to give you all the statistics around that.
Okay. I don't know if you have children, but if you had a boy, would you get him vaccinated?
I do have children. Yeah, I have two girls, so they will be vaccinated. And I shall very much make sure they are vaccinated. And I shall also make sure that they realise they still need to go on at the moment and have cervical screening.
Yeah.
Because what we don't currently know about the vaccination programme is it's really now the girls that we've now got are reaching 18, 19 within the UK with the first one to get the Survivorx programme back in 2009. And obviously now they're going to be going out and doing the activities where they'll be picking up the HPV infection. So obviously we're hoping to see a resulting drop in people presenting at clinic with HPV-related disease. But obviously, rightly so, we're still screening those girls going through the normal cervical screening programme to make sure that if any abnormalities are being detected, they're detected early enough for successful treatment. So certainly from my perspective, I'll be getting my girls vaccinated and encouraging them to still go down the screening side.
Yeah.
Personally, if I had a boy, I probably would myself look to get them vaccinated. I think from nothing else, from a disease point of view, a active HPV genital infection, if it's particularly prevalent, can be quite unpleasant for the person to deal with. It's obviously very easy to spread. With that increasing link between HPV in the mouth and head and neck cancer, it'd be something I personally would look to do if I had a boy. And I do know people that are now going forward and doing this as a private vaccination programme. So it's just something I think people should be very much aware of the virus, very much aware that it is very easy to pick up, it's very easy to spread. If they are thinking they may have picked up HPV, then the best thing to do is just go to a clinic and get themselves looked at to see whether there's anything that can be done. There can be certain amount of treatments for very heavy viral infections, but most cases, most people are left just to clear the infection naturally. But it's something just to be aware of. And obviously, if they're in a high-risk group, again, to think very much about their sexual practices, how well they could be spreading the viral infection, but also if they then wanted to explore the vaccination programme, particularly from a boy's perspective, obviously, they can go and talk to them about their GP about it.
Which sexual practices are particularly risky?
Obviously, what we know in regards to the genital spread, it will be anything that really involves that penetrative aspect of sexual intercourse. Because what we know by regards to how the virus is spread is we think it gets through these little small micro-abrasions in the skin. So the skin is a very good protective layer, and the virus wants to get through that protective layer and infect the bottom layers of your skin. And we think it gets through that through little tiny, like little abrasions in your skin. So if you're then having sexual intercourse in that way, that obviously the penetrative sexual intercourse, you're more likely to have that abrasion occur to your skin. So if you're doing that, obviously to make sure that you are wearing a condom at that stage, that's important to think about. But also what we don't really know is how the virus is getting in the mouth. There are links saying that it may have sexual links, obviously, through oral sex, but we don't know exactly if that's the main route. So they're just thinking a little bit about the fact that if something that living on your genitals may now be able to get into your mouth, and it's not something living in your mouth, it's probably not something that people think about when they think about diseases that perhaps are transmitted in that particular way.
Can it not just be passed on by kissing?
We don't know. Simple answer is we do not know, and it's where research is starting to look into to try and work out if that is a route that can be passed. And again, I've looked into it in some of my research and didn't have any conclusive data. And if you start to go and look at it more within other studies in the US as well, there's no strong link yet to say that it's been passed that way. But I wouldn't want to commit one way or another because simply we do not have the research yet to really understand how the oral HPV infections are being picked up and how they're being spread between other people.
Is this a virus that we can wipe out over the next 20 years or so if we have proper vaccination programmes?
That's always a very good question when it comes to actual whether we can eradicate a virus. I mean, the vaccination programme, we've got one at the moment that goes against 4 different strains of the virus. So there's a new one coming out that goes against 9 different strains of the virus. Bearing in mind there's over 120 different strains of the virus that we are aware of, it's whether how much that vaccination programme will then be able to combat all those different strains. And the simple answer, again, is we just do not know. There now needs to be research again with the vaccination companies to look, the pharmaceutical companies to look to see whether the vaccine that's been developed will be work equally as well against preventing oral HPV. And therefore then, if it does, you would then have that potential link between then seeing a reduction in oral HPV head and neck cancers. But simply the fact is, it's all very new and it's all very much an area that needs to be investigated. So there isn't that strong commitment one way or another at the moment.